Last week, during our sharing time, Cora shared with us a prayer request for this week. Her student group was planning to remember the anniversary of the shooting at Columbine this past Tuesday, and she asked us to pray for that. She's part of an organization that's part of a nationwide group of affiliates, a grassroots organization that helps to end gun violence. And then on Holy Thursday this week, there was another mass shooting. Two dead, many others injured either physically or psychologically, and trauma that will continue. It's complicated to come then, to do this thing that we do on Sundays, and especially on Easter Sunday, to celebrate life when around us death continues, to celebrate joy when around us pain continues. And so for many who do not have Easter in their hearts, they must choose between either ignoring the pain and the death, escaping from all of it, or simply coming and proclaiming an Easter that pretends that there is none, or they dwell in pain and despair, hopeless and fearful. But Christianity, my friends, and the invitation to Easter gives us a way to hold both of these things, to hold hope against despair, to hold fear and faith against fear, and to hold joy even among pain, not only because of what Christ invites us to, but because of the way that in doing so, we stand in resistance to the power of death that Christ collides. Now, we've been following the book of Luke this winter, and we've been following the stories of Jesus in that book. And so today we find ourselves with the story of Easter, the Easter morning reading from the book of Luke. Now this is not actually the most traditional Easter morning story. Most often we read from the book of John. In fact, in my decades of pastoring, I realized that I've never preached on the Easter story from Luke before. Now, I share preaching with Richard primarily, and he may well have done that. But mostly I've preached on John, a few times on other Gospels as well. But this is my first time to really dwell in this Luke Easter story in the way that one dwells in Scripture in preparing a sermon. Now, there are many, many similarities. All four Gospels record this story of Easter, and there are many similarities in it. But there are a few differences as well. They all begin, as this story begins, with women, followers of Jesus, who go to the tomb to prepare his body with spices. And that's what we have again here in Luke. And here then, we find, as we do in all of the Gospels, an empty tomb. Then there are angels that appear to these women, and they proclaim that Jesus has risen. And the women, they go back and they tell the disciples, and the disciples are quite skeptical, let's say. But even a skeptical Peter goes back and he checks the tomb and also finds that it is empty. And he goes home wondering. And that's it. That's the end of the Easter story from Luke, the Easter morning reading, I should say. We don't even really get a glimpse of Jesus except as a missing person. Frankly, John is much more satisfying. That's why we usually read John. I mean, John has Jesus then come and appear at the tomb. Now, I want to be clear here. Luke does record more to this Easter story. In fact, I'd encourage you to read the rest of the chapter of Luke, maybe around the table today. It goes on, Jesus appears to the people on their way to Emmaus. And then later to the disciples as well. We do see the risen Christ in Luke's Easter story, but this reading for the morning, this first 12 verses, leaves us facing an empty tomb and having to decide whether we will go with the women proclaiming this nonsensical story that Jesus has risen, or whether we will return with Peter simply to wonder what to believe. It strikes me as a story for us, for our time, because we too stand knowing that the tomb was empty, yet very few of us have had a face-to-face encounter with Jesus. We too are left with this choice. What shall we do? And I think there are a few phrases, a few important things in this text that help guide us through. The first one is this first statement that the angels proclaim to the women. Why do you look for the dead? Why do you look for the living among the dead? Why do you look for the living among the dead? Now, I mean, it's pretty logical that they would look for Jesus among the dead. That's where they last saw him. They go to react to death like most of us would react to death. I can't imagine what it was like for them. It must have been so fear-inducing to even leave and go out into the city where their dear friend and teacher had been murdered brutally. And to go to the place where he laid, an act of solidarity with him in a time when his stance was considered worthy of execution even by the government. But they did this bravely, with courage. And in showing up, they are greeted by these angels who say, "Why do you look for the living among the dead?" It almost sounds like a challenge, and we want to step in and defend the women and say, well, of course we look for Jesus among the dead, and I fear that we too often still do. We live in a society that is obsessed with death. And if you don't believe me, look at top-grossing movies, books, music. We fear death so much that we can't stop talking about it. We can't stop replaying it on our screens. We are drawn to it. And so it is easy for us to dwell in death rather than life. One commentator musing on this idea says this: "Why do we look for life among deadly bigotries and fatal attractions? Why do we look for life among poisonous cynicism, toxic worry, and unchangeable past mistakes? Why do we as a country look among war, torture, capital punishment, and the oppression of minorities of the poor, and think we will find life?" No, life does not come from the practices that induce death. Life does not come from the things that drag us down into despair. Life comes instead from the things that lift us up. In this time, when death is all around us, it's around us in places in the world that we can, at a scale that we can barely comprehend, in places like Gaza and the Ukraine, and even in certain neighborhoods not so far from some of us. We know death exists, and it is easy to be drawn into that despair because of it. But the act of hope is an act of a resistance. It collides with death. It says that no life-giving comes from death-dealing. And people have wondered how to remain hopeful in these days, and I have found that the best way I know how to remain hopeful is to hang around those people involved in life-giving activities. I find hope and joy and faith in the people that I see doing the work of bringing life. I find hope in people who are building things rather than breaking things, people who are delving into meaning rather than meaninglessness, people who engage in work that brings health rather than harm. So these women who choose to believe in the God of life rather than the systems of death go back to the disciples, and they proclaim this good news of resurrection, that Christ is risen. And the second phrase that I think stands out is that the disciples thought it was nonsense. Malarkey. Actually, commentators often say that the implication would even be some stronger words that I won't say today. They hear this news and they think, they don't know what they're talking about. It takes a lot of courage to present something that sounds counter to all of reality around you. And let me say this, friends. To believe in a risen Christ is to embrace nonsense. It is a joyful act to believe in a God who has the creative ability far greater than any of our imaginations to collide with even death itself. And so we can joyfully, with the women, proclaim nonsense unashamed and with the courage they had. The question is, how did they get that courage? And for that, I return to the third phrase that I think guides us. The angels say to them, remember. Remember what he told you. It is in remembering who Jesus is and what Jesus said that we can understand how to interpret the world. It is the lens through which, and the only lens I claim in this world that wants me to see through the lenses of a lot of other eyes. We remember Christ every time we come here to worship, every time we kneel in prayer, every time we gather around the table. We remember who Jesus was and is. The opposite of remembering is dismembering. Remembering actually, in its essence, means putting the body back together. And it was clearly an act of dismemberment that those who killed Jesus sought. They sought to dismember his message and to dismember his group. And today, sometimes, all those who throw around the name of Christ in ways that seem so un-Christ-like feel like they are trying to dismember Christianity itself. But to remember Christianity is to remember Christ, to keep our eyes focused on Jesus, his birth, his life, his teachings, his actions, his healing, his promises, his death, his willingness to sacrifice and suffer, and yet his victory in death. To claim that our Jesus came, our Messiah, was a suffering servant, not a killer king, and yet his death and resurrection was a triumph for all who suffer. This we can only do through remembering who Christ is. As I thought about those women and the courage it took for them to show up and the courage it took for them to hope in the face of fear, and despair. The courage it took for them to believe, to have faith in the resurrection, the courage it took for them and the willingness and the openness. There was this song that came into my head, and it sort of stuck with me for a whole week. And so I sent this email to Dave and Jeremy because I said, if there's anyone in the church who I can send an email to and say, hey, I thought of this song, you guys want to sing it? It's Dave and Jeremy, so thank you. And I imagined the women singing something like these words. The chorus goes, I am open and I am willing. For to be hopeless would seem so strange. It dishonors those who go before us. So lift me up to the light of change. May all that draws us into despair and death be changed into life and love. May we embrace the hope that is Easter.